Love this podcast? Support this show through the supporter feature from Acast. It's up to you how much you give and there's no regular commitment. Just hit the link in the show description to support now.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here, and it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Hi everyone, welcome to the second installment of the Self-Isolate In here on the YouTube with myself, DJ Walsh, and Owen Cab from Snowcast, and Tim Boyer from the Irish History Podcast. And this week we're joined by the one and only Tony Groves. Tony, who is the man from the Tortoise Shack, host of the Echo Chamber Podcast, co-host of Reboot Republic and a few other fingers and a few other pies. Tony, you're busy.
I'm too busy. This has not been this self-isolating is not working out for me.
Hi everyone, welcome to the second installment of
Thanks, thanks for having us on, guys. How was everybody?
Yeah, good. Good. Well, actually, no, to be honest, I'm going to say I'm starting to find this more and more difficult. The whole last week was grand, and but yeah, I'm definitely starting to find self-isolation. The lack of actually, so I don't really, I live in Kilkenny and I wouldn't see, I live on my own, so I don't actually see that many people. And actually that is starting to, like before, you know, you go downtown, you meet someone, you go for coffee, or even just sitting in the cafe, and now just not seeing anyone at all for potentially days on end. I'm starting doing the garden, that's keeping me sane.
No. Yeah, have a gardener look about you, all right?
Is it okay to say that this should have been someone's wedding today, or is that too much
oh,
of a
God. Too raw, is it?
No, it's not raw at all, man. Listen, six more months for the bride to see saints. Yeah, I should have been getting married today, so should be just about finishing my meal and get ready to start my speech around now. But sure, instead I said I'd join you lads for an old can.
How bad
I should appreciate that.
Speaking of cans, lads, what are you drinking tonight?
I'm on Soldier's Island by Kildare Brewing Company. It's a 5%er. It's a peach made of usual ingredients, barley, hops, water. But yeah, no, it's really nice. I'm going to switch on to this electric juice. I think you were you drinking that last week, DJ, or...
I was on the electric juice last week. Yeah, I did a bit of everything last week, to be honest.
Yeah, so did I, actually.
Yeah.
But yeah, that's great. It's quite nice. It's like kind of a little bitter, but it's not too. I don't really like very, very bitter beers. Like, but yeah, big fan of the Kildare Brewing Company. Pretty much only discovered them because of the coronavirus. So that's a silver lining, I suppose.
Definitely, yeah. Tony, what are you on yourself?
I'm drinking it's Blue Moon, but you know it's brewed right. The water's from the Talca. The hops are basically made of coddle. It's pure Dublin. Like it says Belgian, but it's pure Dublin. Yes, no slice of orange though for it. You know, do you ever get in a big jug where they put the slice of orange on the side?
I was told you were classy, but clearly not.
Honest to God, like, I remember the porterhouse on the before it became what the Bernard Shaw used to serve it on draft. It was one of few places, and the James Inn on opposite Vicar Street would serve it as well. But they used to serve it in like that 1.5 pint glass, you know, the big thing that would knock your socks off, because they pack a punch, the Belgian beers anyway, so it's not the worst.
No, definitely not. Ben, what are you taking to yourself this week?
I am on the same as Guinness.
Oh, the pint of Guinness. I love it.
Yeah.
It's the same one from last week.
There's the end of a slab in the shed that I'm working my way through. So that's what...
Every Christmas leftovers for the last 10 years. And I suppose I'm on the Van City West Coast IPA from the same... Kildare Brewing Company. This yoke is 6.5% and I'm halfway through my second can, so by the end of this I will be talking some shite. And yeah, similar enough, came across in the same way as Owen, and it's an absolute bang of hop profit. I think it's probably a testament to the laws around another family of hops, a family of plants that are similar are related to hops, that you can indulge in Vancouver if you so well please. So lovely tasty stuff. We said tonight we're going to get stuck into basically how this pandemic is going to shape the media, and I suppose we're going to talk about how the media are handling the pandemic at the moment. So what do you reckon, lads? How is the Irish media coping with the pandemic compared to, for example, our mates in the UK and the US?
Do you want to start?
Go ahead, Finn.
Yeah, overall, I think I've been pretty critical of the Irish media. I think, generally speaking, though, I think they are doing a pretty good job in this, in terms of, obviously, the media are playing a really important role in terms of getting information out there, and I think they're doing that well. Yes, there is things to be desired. I think there are programs actually that are really problematic. The one that I'm really thinking of is, I think, Liveline, for example. Shows like that should actually be taken off the air during times like this, because we're obviously going through a crisis. We need to rally around each other. We don't need someone to amplify voices, though, of random people often who are just really scared, and they're amplifying them. And if you hear those voices on the radio, I think it can lead to a heightened sense of fear, because they gain legitimacy off that. And I do think actually leaving Liveline talking about the coronavirus, I don't know if they're still doing it, but when I tuned in, I just heard the usual kind of muck of like, oh, tell me how you feel. Do you feel scared? And it's like, well, of course she does, or he does. We all do. But amplifying that on a national radio station is not really the way to go. Other than that, I actually think, and the only one I've been listening to is RTE. I think it's been relatively good. I don't know what I guess there could be more critique of the government package. But in terms of actually getting information out there, I think they've done a pretty good job. That's my.
I'd be stronger than that, actually. I think RTE have done a fabulous job for the most part. Genuinely think they've done a fabulous part. I think not everybody exclusively, but you're never going to. There's people for everybody, I suppose. People will listen to their own channels. There are some of my critiques would be more cosmetics, or it'd be around the the West Wing style nonsense that's going on, I'm surprised that they don't play Leo Varadkar's speech to people in ICU and hope they'll just stand up and walk out, because this nonsense of listening to that actually saved the world. I mean, he's not a great orator. He delivered a good line or two, and it was a reassuring speech for a lot of people. We didn't need the hyperbole in the morning. I thought there was a lot of that. And now there's also, the only other critique I'd have is that there are people who generally in the media is well represented. There's, there's people who you would know would be historically Fine Gael or historically Fianna Fáil or whatever it is. And they're now taking this as an advantage to say, you know what we should do? We should forget about the general election we had a few weeks ago and just give Leo just give him his head for the next 10 years. Like, you know, and we can't let that go either, because there has to be, we have a constitution. We just had an election. We need a government, and we need to form that on basis on how the democratic will of the people. However, we talked exclusively for the coronavirus coverage. I think it's been very good. I think it's been, like, when I look at this stuff in the UK, geez, yeah. we're light yeah. years ahead.
Yeah.
I hate doing the whataboutery, but nonetheless, there's a lot of great journalists. And if anybody is watching this other than the three of us, maybe buy a newspaper or support the media. They do a good job more often than not.
Yeah, definitely. I'll go along with that, Tony. I think, like, some of the, like, you look at what, like, people like Fergal Bowers on Twitter there, or Richard Chambers, some of these journalists are like working around the clock. Gavin Riley as well. They're working around the clock, giving up-to-date information, and absolutely working like Trojans just to get the information out to the general public. And in fairness, I think they're delivering it quite well. Owen, what are you making of the media's role in all this?
Yeah, no, guys, I think you covered pretty well. I think, I think RT and the likes are doing a very good well. The only thing I would knock them on is this 9 o'clock nightly announcement. I think it builds up a bit of panic and everyone just waiting yeah. for a figure and stuck on the one time. It's nearly like Hunger Games esque of like firing out who's been eliminated kind of thing.
Yeah, no, I think it is. Yeah, sorry.
So, like, I don't know if they could, like, drip feed it a bit better throughout the day or something, but obviously there's maybe logistics around that as well, why they are doing it exactly that time. And also to take, I suppose, the lighter media crowd of, say, the likes of Joe.ie and those, I think they've played quite a good role in terms of, now, I know it's absolute muck, the content that they do create, but I think it's quite good of going, like, here's 15 things you can do at home. Here's 25, you know, here's whatever, like 25 best things to watch on Netflix, on Disney Plus or whatever. Like, you know, I think like that, like there's been a great surge in social media to try and provide a positive spin on things and to make people like less self-isolated.
Just adding on to that, I think actually the stuff that the Journal did in terms of combating some of the really mad rumours that were going around. Now, I think a lot of us yep. would have seen them and gone, oh, yeah, whatever. But they yeah. definitely were having an impact. And I think it was important that they went off and, you know, did all that really hard stuff of going finding out where it had come from and going, this is why it's not true. I suppose just while we're on this aspect of it, or just touching on what Owen is saying there, I do think actually podcasts are playing an important role in that kind of entertainment sphere as well, because I think a lot of people, I definitely know that there's podcasts that are really important to me at the moment, just not mine.
Yeah, it's patreon.com/IrishHistory. Yeah.
No, but I think that escapism or whatever is definitely important at the moment, because I think it was just what Owen said there, that idea of providing a list of 10 things on Netflix to go and watch, that's all important too. And I think in terms of that stuff, yeah, I think the media is doing well. Probably there's a bigger, much bigger conversation not being had, and I don't know if we have the mental space as a society at the moment to have it as to who's going to pay for all this, because we've been down this road
before. Not us.
Yeah.
Not us this time.
We've been down this road before with austerity, and we know the way, a fair idea the way the government think it's going to be settled. But I think after the banking crisis, I think most people in Irish society aren't going to accept that this time.
It certainly won't finish. Can I come in just to, it won't happen this time, because whatever the best case scenario is, we will all be grieving for someone in the next 12, 18 months, I believe. We know someone. And if a bill falls on the general public that is not bought up by some version of a euro bond, I would say there will be some form of civil unrest which will make the water charges look tiny.
Yeah.
That would be my opinion.
Yeah, I think adding to that as well, I think you've seen all of a sudden in a crisis scenario, the political will is there now to move towards, like, you know, the most basic fundamental building blocks of a socialist society, where, like, you know, universal basic income, banning evictions, these kind of steps. And like, already today, like, you've seen a vote in the Dáil, which is like moved to block a kind of extension of this ban. And you're talking about, like, right, are we going to fucking accept this? Like, you know, it's a very interesting point. I don't see how you can stand by and accept the working class and middle class basically footing the bill for this pandemic that, like, let's call a spade, like, the economy won't be in a great place, partly because society was very fractured and very unequal before the pandemic. And I think we have to, I've been banging on my own personal social media the last couple of days of, like, yeah, grand, applaud, like, do the claps and all that kind of stuff. I'm not back, I'm saying anything bad about all that. But don't forget, like, how undervalued were nurses to the government a year ago, you know? And I think part of the media are very quick. My criticism of certain elements of the media would be how quick they are to just dismiss this, like, there was no GP contract, like, you know, it kept being mentioned. Yeah. The bill of the election. Mm. It wasn't on the table for actual GPs. The nurses were treated like muck on the end of politicians' queue last year, you know, and I just think...
Last year, 25,000 nurses marched through the streets of Dublin because they weren't being paid, and we can't forget that.
Yeah, and one of them, I think that's a fact. And the general public wanted to stand by them then, so let's fucking stand by them when we turn the corner. And I think that's one element of the media that I think is it's missing a bit of a pulse there on, and that's just a minor criticism, because I think in the whole the media have handled it quite well. Lads, how do we think this pandemic and the changes it'll bring about society will actually change how the media will have to approach things going forward? Shane, do you want to take up, start off?
Yeah, actually this is probably the thing that I was thinking about most during the week, because I was thinking of, you know, just how much, like, is there anything, like, say, from previous pandemics, like, can we see, like, changes? And I think probably something that I think that seems to happen is that things like this don't, we shouldn't be looking for entirely new things that are going to come out of this, but what it may do is accelerate changes already underway in society. So what I would kind of think is that one thing that I think is very possible, Tony might go mad when I say this, but I think newspapers are going to come under huge pressure. Like, we've seen newspapers going down in terms of readership. There has to be a cohort now who can't get to shops. They're going to have to look at the alternative, which is obviously in terms of going online and using online news. And I think once you make that jump, that's going to be very difficult to come back from. And I'm not sure newspapers are going to make that jump back, or I would wonder, will newspapers survive the next couple of months? Because an older generation now, maybe the websites that are the news outlets that have the newspapers, say like the Irish Times or whatever, the ones with the big websites, if they can properly reorientate those websites. I know a lot of them have trouble at the moment, but I think old media is probably going to suffer a very serious blow in this. And it's not something I would in any way, I don't buy the division between old and new media at all. And unless something fills that void, it's going to be a huge blow to wider society. But I think this could accelerate that shift to online sources over things like, particularly newspapers. Although that said, I would say one other thing is I do think television will probably gain a bit of respect that it has previously lost, because more people are doing that ritualistic thing of tuning into the 9 o'clock news.
Yeah, definitely. I want to just that what Finn said there actually reminded me of something that you brought up earlier about to me in a separate conversation today about, I suppose, local media outlets and the challenges they're facing at the moment. What are your thoughts on that, like?
Yeah, like, I think what we saw, like, is it the Kilkenny People, Clare Champion, Leinster Leader, all, like, whoever is that conglomerate of papers there seem to be laying off people. And I think it's quite interesting to see what kind of way their business model is going to go, as Finn said. Are they going to, like, veer totally towards online media, or are they going to do a mixture of both? It's quite interesting. I was looking at, like, the Leinster Leader there earlier on, and I went to look at a thing, and I went to look at an article on it, and like, it was just a simple article, but it was immediately under a paywall, And I'm just wondering, is that the right approach? I don't know, Tony, like, you might have a bit of a more of an insight into it, but just in terms of how, like, you know, how they're targeting themselves, even now before this, like, to set up a business plan for themselves, you know?
Oh, that's a very big question. I mean, I think there's a lot of more value in some local news than there is ever before, you know, in terms of some of this, not that it's ever been before, but that there was when I was growing up, where you had your local newspapers and you had them very, you knew what was going on. But because all news became national, and then all news with Sky News became international, and then the Fox News, and see, it all became global. And now we kind of need to know what's happening in our towns and communities now, probably more than ever. So, you know, you look at a great news, the Irish Times, a few months later, a few weeks later, but, you know, they're doing great work, but they have to rely on people like me who are going to pay a subscription charge. And so it's the same thing. Like, I saw, like, for example, I don't know if you guys have noticed that the Rogue Collective has started up with a feminist writing and podcasts and blogs and all of these pieces, and it's a great initiative, and it's all behind the paywall. The currency is 25 euro a month, all behind the paywall. Every article, everything, you know, and their way, because you've seen even the Belgian company that purchased INM, they're not interested in print. They've pulled out of print in many of their markets that they've already been printing in. But when it comes to it's a great age to be a journalist, because you've access to information, you've access to, I mean, like, I was talking to a guy today in Kurdistan, like, just like that. I wanted someone who had been on the ground when the cholera epidemic happened in Yemen, and you get this guy and you can talk to him. I'm not a journalist, I just have a podcast, and I can do that because the world is small now. But it's a terrible time to be a journalist and want to actually make a good living from it, you know.
I agree with the print media itself just kind of going out. I was even saying to the DJ earlier on, like, even looking at, even when you walk into news agents or any shop that would have newspapers, I don't know if it's in my own mind, but, like, from years ago where, like, the newspaper was one of the first things you saw when you came into the shop, where there was a stand in front of you. I feel that has kind of gone out. I'm not sure if even shops themselves now want to market it. I don't think they even see themselves as one of the main, like, sellers for them.
Yeah, I think it used to be the case that, like, in a shop, someone would come into the shop to buy the paper, and then they just happen to buy five or six other things while they're in there. And it was almost like newspapers were this, like, attraction for someone to come into the shop, and then they just happen to spend it. You know, they'll spend a fiver instead of just a 1 euro or whatever it was on a newspaper. The other thing as well, I think, with that, that's quite interesting is, like, you look at, right, is this the direction the media was going anyway, and has the pandemic just accelerated it? So look at sports journalism, for example, like a lot of the leading sports journalists in the world. And I know, Tony, this is a sphere that you're, like, after just opening up with you and McKenna coming on board to start a podcast with the Tortoise Shack. So there's a nice plug for you now, the black eye. But I think it's really interesting that The Athletic came along and took an awful lot of the biggest sports journalists in the world, who would have done an awful lot of the main coverage of, like, worldwide sports. And now there a lot of them are writing for The Athletic, and The Athletic has kind of almost muscled its way into sports journalist podcasts. And then it's no longer on a paper, it's on an app. Now, I've actually tuned into a lot of those podcasts and found that a lot of those journalists are saying that this kind of new space is giving them an opportunity to do more long writes, and they can do, like, you know, pieces that are interviews or opinion pieces with much bigger word spacing than they could ever have in a newspaper, because of, like, the need for marketing on newspapers, advertising, and basically trying to cram everyone's journalism into one newspaper, which is an interesting viewpoint. I'm not saying it's right or wrong, but just for example, like, I would buy the Waterford News and Star every now and again down here, but I've found that I find local journalism in Ireland fantastic. I think there's some absolutely amazing local journalists, and in Waterford, for example, we have Dermot Keyes and Darren Skelton, who I am big admirers of, and I just find that right, fuck it, I want to give a 6-month subscription to the News and Star now, because they need people to subscribe online, because I'm not going to the shop to buy a newspaper at the moment. But at the same time too, I'd love to, in September, be able to buy a newspaper again. So I'd lament the fact that newspapers could be on the way out.
I subscribe to loads of newspapers. I have digital subscriptions for loads of newspapers. Part of it is that I still believe in that if I want news, I need to pay for it, and I believe the work that the journalists do has value. And then part of me is kind of just an old fogey. Like my family had a newspaper selling patch on the corner of where old Hector Gray's used to be in Middle Abbey Street. You know what I mean? So I've got. But that's my roots, so I kind of have that in me. But I do love I see things like The Athletic, and I think of the failed experiment that was, if you remember, ESPN had a Page Two, which was initially Bill Simmons' first long form area, where he had all these brilliant writers that they could write what they wanted without the need for, you know, give me 400 words. And of course that became Grantland, and then it became a failure, and now he's back with his own his own product, The Ringer, and that's been bought by Spotify recently. So, you know, I don't know if there's room in the market for all of them, and I certainly don't know if there's room in the market for The Athletic to be keep paying the salaries of all of these people that they've brought on when there's no sport to cover. Because that's, at the end of the day, only you're not going to read 25 think pieces. You want to see who won the match last night, you know?
Absolutely. And Finn, I suppose, coming into the... It'll be fascinating in terms of long term. Like, I know your podcast is associated with the Irish Newspaper Archive. What's the official term again?
Was associated.
Was, is it? Yeah.
I guess that's different though, in terms of, like, there's always going to be that demand for what newspapers said. I think what's interesting though about that is if we lose these sources that are, you know, like, I am very critical of newspapers today, but they give, the Irish Times gives a view, it gives information that is, generally speaking, if you look at the Irish Times over a 3-month period, most big stories in Ireland will have been covered in it to one degree or another. It's not the paper of record anymore, but still, these stories tend to get into it. If these newspapers go, what would you do in 2 years' time or 5 years' time? You want to look back. Where do you look back to? Because, like, you can't look back to, like, the journal doesn't really fulfill that. And I would just, it opens up the space for fake news, all that kind of stuff, massively. If you don't have, like, and these traditional, like, I guess what I'm saying is, I wouldn't be without criticism of some of the traditional media groups. Like, I do resent sometimes being with journalists who write for the big newspapers, going, buy the newspaper. It's like, going, I will buy the newspaper, but if you want me to buy the newspaper, it's a two-way process, and I don't want to read. If I buy, like, you know, you can say the Irish Times has a certain perspective, and then it will introduce people maybe from the Iona Institute who have no purchase in this society and allow them to write articles week in, week out about various different things. Now, personally, I don't want to spend my money on that. So I guess the idea that the media is removed from society will also change as they become more and more subject to people who read it paying directly, like subscriptions online.
We called it, like, there's too much of the views papers, as they call them, instead of the newspapers. There's far too many, you know, and everybody, in terms of the views papers, what they want is that there's a formula for it. There's a self-declared, self-identifying centrist who leans to the right, who has a small c conservative and Christian views, maybe sticks in his Twitter bio liberal, classic liberal, you know. This, we know the type, and they are actually all... they're a generic think piece, and they're done to generate clicks. And, you know, and that's the problem. Sometimes in traditional media, they will tell you they're not in that world. Oh, no, we don't do that. That's what social media does, generates outrage. That's what social media does. No, it's all in the industry as well. And, you know, Unfortunately, we're not well served by much of the talking heads that go on, because there's definitely a consensus. You only have to look at some of the what you call the rotating panels who come in and out of these things, and they're the same 6-7 people all the time, over and over and over, and there's a reason why people have turned away from that. And Finn, you pointed out quite well, people have turned away from it because it's not representative of Ireland. Where are the people of colour? Where are the people from the travelling community? Where are the LGBT people? Where are the, you know, where are these people? I mean, I'm aware that there's four white guys here saying this, but I'm also really fucking pissed off that it's so obvious to anybody who's looking in, yeah, that is not representative of Ireland anymore.
Yeah, I absolutely agree with that, Tony.
Rant over.
No, but you are absolutely spot on. But I think you could get yourself into trouble by going into the whys and what are the reasons behind that. But without a shadow of a doubt, I think you're on the ball. Like, we need a media to represent what Ireland is now, and what Ireland is now can vary, and has varied greatly from, like, when we were going up 20, 30 years ago. You know, it's a completely different country right now.
I just wanted to add in on that there, like, what Finn was saying there about fake news and, like, a views paper as well. Like, so, like, I'm here now, and I'm talking, and this is part of, I'm part of media, and I can say to you that I'm walking on the Curra there earlier on today, and I met one of the guys from the army, and he said to me, that he was up at Orson Outron, and that there has been a case of COVID-19 in Orson Outron.
Seriously?
And that Michael D. Higgins is in isolation in his bedroom, and that, like, for him, when he's doing all those press conferences, that they've had to do the shed out the back. So, like, who verifies me here saying that? Like, yeah, you know, or, like, who verifies anyone? Is there a role in technology for, like, this verification of news sources, or, you know, like, surely there's, like, there's some sort of way of, like, fact checking these things, like, through an algorithm, like, you know.
But if you look at newspapers, like, 170,
that was fake news, by the way. That was fake news. Yeah. Michael D. All right.
If someone logged on at that moment where Owen is saying, "I was up in Orson today," and someone is already cutting that out and it's flying around WhatsApp groups at the moment.
I just retweeted it from a well-known centre-right journalist at this moment.
But I think it is a bit like where newspapers were like 150 years ago. Like, if you look at newspapers, particularly in the early 19th century, they used to publish all sorts of madness. Like, in Kilkenny, there was two newspapers, The Moderator and The Journal. And the front page article on each of them in the early 1840s used to slag off the other one. And they had this running feud. And it was kind of like a blog, the way you would today, you know, like two people, or a Facebook post almost, attacking, you know, their rival or whatever. But I don't know where, I think that's where we are with the internet at the moment, that it's just a free-for-all Wild West. The problem with this is, in terms of regulating that, it asks huge questions, though, about everything, in terms of, like, why am I allowed to say what I'm allowed to say then? Who says what I'm right? You know, it's not just about news, it's going to become about everything, about history, every aspect of everything that's published on the internet then would be fair game once they can start regulating what is. And the problem is, what is true news and what is fake news is totally in the eye of the beholder. There's not, like, you know, we do live in a post-truth society in that regard. Like, you know,
I don't want to be ageist in saying this, but I do think at the same time you're talking about, we're in a very unique era of the information age, where you've got a whole generation, like, say, my parents' generation, who didn't have the internet growing up. They came to the internet like later on in life. So all of a sudden, they'll just share anything that looks like, you know, it might, like, they're, do you know what this stereotypical, Jesus, my aunt fucking Mary or my aunt Bridie shares everything on Facebook, and look at all this stuff she's sharing. As opposed to, like, you know, I think younger people now are a bit more keen to verify what they're sharing. But I mean, for example, like, the best source of information in relation to the pandemic that I've come across so far is a Twitter account by an IT business analyst, not a politician, not a medical person, but actually it's an IT business analyst, Catherine O'Sullivan is her name. And basically, she just puts up once a day a mathematical model of predicting how many cases we'll have by when the Taoiseach said we'd have 15,000 cases. And every day she puts up the percentage in increase and what the model predicts we'll have on the 1st of April. And it actually shows quite a positive trend when you look at it. But it's a very simple chart and it's very easy to interpret. I just think, like, you know, we've got people coming up with innovative ways of displaying data, not just from the media, but when you look at social media, what it is it's giving a media voice to every individual. And you've got this woman somewhere in Ireland doing this mathematical model. She's probably applying her skills to what she's being told about the pandemic. And it's actually fantastic news because there's so much negativity, and rightly so. But when you actually look at the last couple of days and you're going from, right, we were looking at a 33% increase in cases each day. And we were like, right, if we get that down to 25%, Simon Harris is saying, we're doing really well. And like we've had 18%, 18%, and 16% in the last 3 days, an increase in number of cases. So it's funny, but the challenge, I think, for media then nowadays is how do you handle that and what way do you portray it to the general public? And it's very easy to look at that and say, right, lads, we're on the right way now. Don't worry, go off and meet your neighbour for a picnic and go up and visit your aunt. We're on the right track. But actually what this is saying is, the way I would interpret this is social distancing and the majority of people engaging with it, because these groups of 20 youth and stuff like that, they are in the minority, in fairness. If the majority of people can go along with this and keep that figure as low as possible, we are on the right track, regardless of the political failings or success, etc. And it's just a very, very simple thing. And I just think it's a real positive out of all this from a media perspective, that people are using skills like being an IT business analyst and applying that to the pandemic and giving really relatable data that is actually quite useful.
You gotta remember.
Sorry, go on.
No, go ahead.
No, I was just saying it's very indicative of how Twitter can give this voice to someone who, like, it wouldn't get a voice generally. Like, you know, you can say what you want about Twitter, but it does have its positives in that sense. Like that, I've been following that person as well, and like it is actually that boost that you get once a day. Like, just been like, oh god, we're actually doing something right here. We are seem to be kind of flattening the curve. Well, not sure about flattening the curve, but making it less steep, I suppose, in this upward trend. And yeah, I think DJ, it's a good point there.
My only concern on it, obviously, is that when you're with the more you learn about it, the worse you begin to think about it. And you know, you go and you talk to people who are 10 days waiting on a test and 10 days waiting on a result, and I don't want to go down that negative road, but I will say, you know, we got to also recall that this is narrative, is what DJ is talking about. It's about selling that to the public and how you frame that. So, you know, was I disappointed in the numbers that they came out? I was thrilled to see the numbers being below. But I was disappointed that the Taoiseach went, this is great news. I thought, as someone who's done sales before, you should be saying, no, we still need to remain vigilant, cautious, yeah. Cautious. Yeah. We need to stress those things. Don't give people the, when you know, in sales, they say, you know, under promise and over deliver. It'd be great to hit April 1st and turn around and say, listen, lads, we maybe missed this wave, but we're still on an upward trajectory. I don't know. I think we need more seriousness about it. And look, I don't live in a rural area. I don't know about you guys. I know, Finn, you live in the middle of nowhere. What's Kilkenny? town, two pubs, one horse. But there are still people, you know, practicing not practicing social distancing. But I saw it this evening and it was hilarious. I went up to get my cans that you said to bring for this evening, and there was a queue outside the off license because only two people were allowed in at the same time, and everybody was standing at two meter differences up the road. And I just thought, this is bizarre, but this is the new world.
But it's brilliant though. It's people heeding the advice, and I think that's the key point, is like, you're dead right in what to say. We shouldn't be selling the smoothening of the curve as a success. We should be reinforcing the point that this is what we need to maintain. This is the minimum acceptable standard of what we're doing at the moment. I suppose just to move on to the next point then, lads, we talked about the traditional media and how that's going to change. The four of us here all are podcasters.
Everybody's a podcaster now.
We all have different types of podcasts.
Definitely all white guys as well.
Absolutely, but that being said, what do we think the effect of this pandemic will have on podcasting? Go on, Finn. You're the
senior podcaster in the room.
Yeah, you're the old wise head amongst us all when it comes to podcasting. What do you reckon? You've seen it all. You've been there.
I think Acast put out stuff saying that they've had their biggest month now ever in the last month, so that would indicate more people are. I think it's gonna. I do think podcasting probably, and I kind of toy around whether this is a good or a bad thing for us. But in the current situation where we want to retreat into ourselves a bit, podcast. It's not just because people have time, but podcasting really helps with that. That you can kind of retreat back into your own, because it's very much you listen on your own. Most people don't listen to podcasts with other people, and I actually noticed it myself that I wanted to. You know, you just got this idea of I must listen to that again. And it was a series that I listened to. It's Mike Duncan's History of Rome, and it was one of the first big history podcasts out there. But the idea of, I'll go back listening to that now. And I was kind of going, is that some sort of like comfort thing that I'm trying to get back to? But I think podcasting, as a medium anyway, will suit that idea of people retreating away from the world into. So I think there will be a massive increase in it. Also, people just have more time. Podcasting has been kind of breaking through for the last 2 years or whatever. So the people who haven't at this point, who are living under a massive rock, are going to climb out from under that rock and download Stitcher or Spotify or whatever. There's a whole other argument, though, about how all the podcasts that won't survive this. So while the amount of people listening to podcasts might increase, a lot of shows are going to go to the wall, because podcasting is either done as in people's spare time, or people who make podcasts professionally don't make a lot of money at it. Margins are really tight. People could be working longer hours. All these things are going to put huge pressure on. So there's millions of episodes out there to be listened to. So there's plenty of stuff for people to listen to that they don't. So there's going to be that, constriction, whatever the word is, that the numbers of shows could get narrower. The quality will definitely go down, because you're going to get loads, like the one from Dairy Girls joking like about the guy starting.
Stephen, that's me. I'm Stephen.
I'm laughing because I think that's a really interesting point. Like myself and Owen, as two incredibly casual podcasters who basically the amount of money we put into our podcast is basically how much does a couple of pints cost in a taxi home each week? You know, that's the extent of it. I find that, say, for example, just to take a parallel, Finn, when I first came into in contact with the Irish History podcast maybe a year and a half, 2 years ago, it was like a week off where I was tipping around the house and I just stumbled across it. I burned through your entire fucking Vikings Raiden catalogue in 3 or 4 days because I had nothing to do. And I think that's what you'll see, is you'll see this mass uptake. Yeah. But as well, I think it's a good point. In fairness, myself and Owen, I think, would have had genuine fears about Snowcast when this all hit. Pubs are closed. We record a podcast in a pub. It's innovate or die, basically, And that's ultimately what we're trying to achieve here is do something to keep occupy yourself and do something to take your mind off the COVID stuff, even though we've talked about it in the two self-isolating so far. But I think it's a really interesting point. Tony, I know you guys, have chosen to expand in possibly the worst time in human history to try and expand. How are you coping? Where do you see it going for podcasts in the future?
We were kind of, we were an accidental platform. I was talking to someone this morning, who had been on nearly 3 years ago on our podcast, and was he asked me, "What are you doing at lunchtime?" On my lunch, and I said, "At lunchtime," he said, "I'm editing a podcast about I can't even say it. This is how much of a prude I am about different sex toys and how they're used and how to enhance sexual pleasure." and he said. So we're launching a new podcast on Monday with Dr. Caroline West, and it's going to be called Glow West, and it's about sexual well-being and sexual health. And she's talking to these incredible people who are from, you know, within the sex industry, within all of these things. And it's just, but, you know, if you would ask me that that's what I was going to be doing on my lunch break, even, you know, it's just insane. It's become all consuming. We launched, as you mentioned earlier, I don't even think it's a sports podcast. I think it's a human interest through the prism of sports, because there's no sports to talk about. So it's more, you know, it was two lads who went to Cheltenham. Why did you go to Cheltenham? It wasn't about horse racing. It was about what was the mentality that said, I want to go to see Cheltenham, as opposed to that. And then obviously when we started the Echo Chamber, that was really because we were just annoyed listening to the same. Like I just said here, we can do this. If Matt and Ivan are at it all the time, we might as well try and do it. And sure, we know enough people we can just get in, and you know, and then you turn around and like I said, today you get to talk to a guy who's in Kurdistan, and he's giving you his information when he was in, when he said one day he opened the curtains and he heard on the radio ISIS were on their way, and he opened the curtains and ISIS drove by, and he went and he closed the curtains. They're like, you know, going, oh, shit. So how can you not love doing that? You know what I mean? Yeah. So, but it is not, Finn is right. It's not really sustainable. It's not really viable. The margins are so fine. If you're as idiotic as I am, where you get your own server, you get your own network, you get your own all of these things. That's all. That's like, he mentioned Acast. I'm nowhere near any of them. I'm out here on my own in my little room in the spare room in the house. Finn, you've sat in it. You're twice the size of the room.
that's very interesting, Kyle. I put it this way, Chad. Like I find, right, Owen, I'd love to get your take on this, because the one thing that we talk an awful lot of nonsense, but we very rarely actually talk to each other about our own podcast, like, and stuff like. How do you see Irish podcasting going throughout this pandemic and out the other side of it?
I think the professionals, like the high-ranking professionals of it, are going to probably suffer the most. I think every Tom, Dick and Harry is going to probably start up an old podcast. Like a friend of mine is starting up the Irish Interior Designs podcast. So make that as fun.
I think, in fairness to Tommy, he planned that before the pandemic. Maybe the pandemic.
I know he did. In fairness to him, but I actually think he'd be pretty good at it. He runs an antique shop in Waterford. But yeah, no, as I was saying, I think the pros are going to suffer the most. Like, I think as Finn was saying there, the margins are probably quite tight amongst everyone, and they probably rely the most on live gigs and touring and things like that. So all of those gone out the window. And I know, Finn, like, you've probably, I'd say your tours that you were doing probably pre-podcast have been upped because of the podcast, and like been selling out because of that. So I think we touched on it a little last week, but like, you know, those tours are cancelled now. And same, I was listening to Blind Boy as well there during the week, and like all his gigs are cancelled, and he got screwed over, I think, for a gig in London that he had lined up, and he just thought it wasn't worth it. I don't know, 2 weeks ago or whatever, and that was pre the lockdown, so he ended up getting screwed over a bit. But yeah, I think as well, actually, just looking at the comments there on our live chat there, and Ben Park was saying that he listens to podcasts most of the time while he's in work. There are 10 different podcasts. But now that he's not working, he's only getting a couple done at a time. So it's kind of interesting to hear that Acast getting a surge, probably, of new listeners. But if you're wondering, those people who are always listening to podcasts the whole time.
Yeah. And commuters, there's no commuting now.
Commuters,
yeah.
Exactly, yeah. So,
I think, though, as well, we're going to go through phases.
I don't know if we mentioned this last week, but I think we're still, to an extent, I think people are probably a bit in the Christmas holidays routine. You know, like you're watching everything on Netflix. Over the next couple of weeks, though, people are going to start developing different routines as they try and deal with what's going on. And I fear, and I think it would be good for podcasting, but I don't think it's good for people, that people will, if they spend more and more time inside, retreat more and more inside themselves, you know, to escape. The world at the moment is not a nice place. And podcasting is the thing to really facilitate that, because it's a form of entertainment that requires nobody else. Actually, you want no one else around, yet someone is still engaging with you. I think it will grow off the back of this. At the moment, radio is doing really well as well. Numbers listening to radio are up. That's because people want to hear the news. I suspect the longer this drags on, people won't want to hear the news as well. If we're getting like deaths after death, I on occasion now go 2 days where I'm just like, you know what, I actually just need 2 days away from this, where I'm not going to stress about what the next, you know, where the next, the next PPE crisis, or the next crisis about hospital beds, or, you know, where you're thinking about people in like who are really struggling, or like then you go, okay, this is actually, you know, I need to like manage this, because if I don't, well, that sounds a really whatever privileged thing to say, that I just can't deal with thinking about this while other people are going through it. But like, I think there is going to be a thing in society where people need to remove themselves, because this is stressful for us all, because we're all worried about ourselves, or, you know, our relatives or whoever who are at risk and all this. And I think in that situation, podcasting is going to become, more and more people will start listening to it over radio, because, you know, that thing that I was saying, I can turn on a podcast series from like 10 years ago about the history of Rome, and he's going to be talking about, COVID definitely won't come up in that, and I just won't continue all the way through to the collapse of the Roman Empire, because it's a bit too familiar.
Owen, Phil makes a good point there about shutting off from it all. As someone who's going into a large public hospital every day, like, how are you managing shutting off from it all?
Hip hop classics playlist on Spotify.
That'll do it. That'll definitely do it.
It's tough though, because like, you're getting emails from like HSE, like corporate or whatever, and you're getting emails from the like managers or upper management within the hospital and things like that. So it is quite tough to turn it off. And as well, also, nobody is doing anything in their own daily lives anyway. So that when you go to talk to them, they're like, hey, what you do last night? Listen to the news, or just sat on my own. Like, nobody has actually any of their own news. Nobody does anything. So it is actually quite tough to switch away from it. I suppose, like, you just have to, like, just, I don't know, make light of it, but, like, make light of your situation and make light of working with people on a, like, on a close basis and every day. But, yeah, I don't know, it's tough. It's tough going.
Brilliant. Right, lads, let's move to some more lighthearted chat before we finish up the podcast. I'm going to start off with the first comment on the live chat tonight. Tony, it's a direct question for yourself. From my brother Ian, is that a New Orleans Pelicans basketball jersey in the background?
No, that's not. That's Indiana Pacers. My God, like, I mean, I have a vision of getting a green screen. I'm so upset now. I want to get a green screen behind me in this in an NBA basketball court, and I'm going to sit in that jersey, and I'm going to say I'm recording the podcast just after fulfilling my lifetime dream of playing at Conseco Fieldhouse. Yeah, no, I wanted to be Reggie Miller growing up. What can I tell you?
That's gas, because actually, speaking of New Orleans, like, to bring it down a tone for a second, we were supposed to go to New Orleans next week. But my brother Ian, who asked that question, he's just a massive American football fan. He loves the New Orleans Saints, so the New Orleans Pelicans obviously is his affinity for basketball. So I suppose that's where he was coming from. He'd be disappointed.
No. The Pelicans, they've won decent player, but they've never done much.
What are you talking about?
Absolutely.
This is not hurling. I don't know what you're talking about.
I was going to say, Finn, actually, earlier on when you were talking about those two newspapers in the 1840s, like, bickering amongst each other, I was like, is that basically the foundations for James Stephens and Lachlan Gales?
Actually, talking about Hurling, like, we can't even talk about Hurling. They've converted Northern Park into a COVID testing centre.
Yeah, they've taken everything away from us. A different question coming from Ben Park. What are all your thoughts on Trump claiming he's going to open the US for business for Easter Sunday? I mean, Easter Sunday is a holy day. Why is he opening business? We could probably do an hour on him. What is your one sentence summation of Trump opening business for Easter Sunday? Owen, go first.
Clown. Full stop.
Tony.
I'm afraid of the body count.
Yeah. I including your own probably for saying that.
Yeah.
What do you reckon?
I don't think it's going to happen. I think, tragically, given what seems to be unfolding in New York at the moment, like I'm really fearful for people I know in the US at the moment. Like
it seems like this kind of
idea even that they might, like, that's not going to happen, I don't think. I actually think it's terrible that it's not, because obviously it's terrible that it's not, but the reasons why I don't think Easter Sunday is because I think by Easter Sunday, if things keep going the way they're going in the US and the way it seems to be heading, that country's going to be in the grip of a monumental crisis, where the idea of going back to work on Easter Sunday is just, like, won't be on the cards at all.
I don't think so. I think it's a bit mad to even consider fucking opening business for Easter Sunday. Right, guys, we'll move on. The next question. Tony, I already know the answer to this for you, but I give you the opportunity for saying it for anyone who listens to this podcast back later on. The first pint and pub you'll be enjoying after this pandemic is over.
Listen, lads. We'll all be in the diggers at some stage, I'm sure, yeah?
Oh, listen, when this is all over, the four of us are going to meet up in the diggers.
You didn't know.
Yeah, I mean, we talked earlier on about how is it going to change media, but I think all pubs need to go contactless at the end of all this, and Diggers needs to get up with the times, so I don't have to PayPal you a few quid for a few pints. Owen, what's the first pint and pub you'll be enjoying after the pandemic is over?
I say I might go to, I'd say Phil Grimes, and probably get something random out of the tap there. Great spot in Waterford.
Brilliant, brilliant. Finn, what about you? First pint of pub you'll be enjoying when the pandemic is over?
I'll probably stall around to Billy Burns and have a few.
Not bad, not bad at all. I could join any of the three of you, to be honest, because there are three good pubs and three good pints. But I'm going to say, for contrariness sake, if I end up in Cork, for example, when all this is over, I'm going to go to Sissy Young's and have a pint of something from the Blacks of Kinsale.
I keep hearing people saying Cork. Has anybody ever been to Cork? People keep saying it, and I've never actually...
I mean, imagine actually marrying someone from Cork, like, let's... So, apparently, as well, we've got a reply back, Tony. The Pacers stink, but...
Would you stop?
This probably is one, another one for American before we finish up there. Favorite NBA, NFL, and MLB teams, if you have any. Finn, I'd say this is outside your scope, is it?
LA Lakers.
good job. Tony, go on. This is right up your alley.
No, but like, I mean, like, it is the Pacers. It begins and ends with the Pacers. It was literally growing up, everybody liked Michael Jordan, and I wanted the guy who everybody didn't like, that they booed. Do you remember when Spike Lee lost the plot in Madison Square Garden when Reggie had like 8 points in 11 seconds, and that was it then. I had to get up at about 2 a.m. to watch them. I think I was doing my junior cert at the time or something, you know. they were the days, folks. See, when you had to get up and watch it, where you couldn't just Skype.
It was called the inter cert when you did it, Tony, no?
So take your beanie off. I still have better hair than you.
You do, you certainly do.
I'm staying out of that conversation. That can be a fight between Owen and Tony. Tony, any NFL or MLB teams, or is it just stop at basketball?
Yeah, no, in NFL, I kind of have a soft spot for, and it has to be said, only because people hate them and they win all the time, the Patriots. It's purely that anti thing of everybody hates them and they cheat. I always used to say, yeah, what is the saying that Jordan was supposed to say? If you ain't cheating, you ain't trying.
Yeah, so Lance Armstrong said that too. I don't fancy baseball, to be honest. Owen, do you fancy baseball?
I'd feel like I'm throwing the LA Dodgers, LA Lakers, and I'll be with Tony there as well, the Pats. So it's all the things you've won throughout the year.
The glory hunter. So I'm
a United fan, might as well be.
Yeah, I would go with NBA, I'd go with the... I'd be a fan of the Oklahoma City Thunder. I don't follow it too much, and I just think I think I've said it on Snowcast before a couple of times, but I think basketball players are the most phenomenal athletes in the world. I think there's no other sport in the world. From an athletic point of view, I think that they are physical specimens, every single one of them.
You often watch a live game of Quidditch, man.
Yeah, but the show.
A good game of Junior B, surely you'd find the best specimens.
I'm a Junior B vintage player, man. I've been involved into it. I have too many scars in my body with Junior B to fucking count.
There's a great Tumblr account of Junior B, like with lads driving heifers off a pitch and that kind of stuff.
Listen, that right down my street, like. Tony's
what are you doing, Tony?
I've no idea.
Look at me throwing it down, lads. Throwing it down, 180.
I know the picture he's thrown up there, so I share it on social media after. I
used to get up there. I used to be able to get up there.
I've got a Minnesota Vikings hat on as well, but I don't think we've got any baseball fans in the group. And I think as well we've got a couple of more comments. It's just people slagging Tony off, to be honest, about his picks, to be fair. Listen, lads, that was great crack. I think we finish up the podcast now, and we'll probably finish our cans off and have a bit of chat afterwards. Tony, thanks a million for joining us in the Self-Isolate Inn. I think it's going to last longer than we initially thought, this lockdown and the pubs being closed and stuff. So we might get you back on in a couple of weeks if you're up for it.
The news is that we're going to full lockdown, I believe, while we were on this. So
no way.
Oh yeah.
Yeah, it wouldn't surprise me. The
Taoiseach is telling us all now that the four of us have to stay here. So everybody, just stay here where you are.
Yeah. Keep the cameras rolling.
What does a full lockdown mean? What do you mean?
It means you keep doing what you're doing, mate. No more topless running for me.
Does that mean you're not allowed outside the gaff, though?
Yeah, the Nordine outside.
Go on, Tony.
Do you know that permission slip they have in France and Italy, Finn?
Yeah.
You can only go out to go to the pharmacy, the shop, or to go for a run on your own or walk your dog.
Well, how do I get one of them to go for a walk?
you need to go for a run on your own to the pound.
Can I leave the house so I can go for a walk tomorrow?
Yeah.
For two weeks, April 12th, everyone has to stay home in all circumstances except essential services, shopping, medicines, care for relatives, or brief exercise. So a brief exercise for me is about a 9-mile run, but all public and private restaurants, every band, we're all screwed.
So does that mean all shops are on those?
No, the same shops will have to stay open that are considered essential. So, you know, whatever made the list. I did you saw that someone said that Leo Varadkar, the man who finally ended the Harvey Norman sale?
uh,
But like, do garden centres not, are all that is going to close now?
I don't know. As far as I'm aware, they were saying that apparently they're saying some of that's going to be considered essential. That, you know, that
whatever, it wasn't Germany. Garden centres were, because I think for mental health.
Yeah, exactly. They were going to class. I saw someone saying they need to close off licenses, and then a doctor came in and said, "No, I can't. I'm not dealing with the lads coming in all angry when they can't have a few cans."
Another vocal person on social media was Anthony O'Connor, the doctor as well, who said that. Like, he said, close the off licenses, and then you'll see a surge in A&Es with the DTs. So he said it's not probably the best idea. They probably are essential, to be fair.
Oh yeah,
he's a pharmacist, is he? No.
No, Anthony O'Connor is a doctor in Dublin.
Yeah. Anthony's a good lad. He's not really. He says he's from Cork, but he's from Tala.
Brilliant. Listen, lads, we finish up the podcast here now, I think, and we're going to chill out and have a couple of pints, pretend that we're in a pub. And tune in next week. We'll have something else in the self-isolate in. And Tony, hopefully we'll have you back again soon. So, more for the listeners, Tony.
Yeah, look, honestly, stay safe, stay home, wash your hands.
Part more for the listener, Finn.
It's long. Talk to you soon.
Owen.
Patreon.com/Irish History.
If you don't mind knocking us off YouTube now, we can get the real chat underway.
Catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. HelloFresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.